time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios once again Tom Carpenter. Tom Carpenter is Executive Director of the Hanford Challenge. Prior to his current position, he worked as the Director of the Nuclear Oversight Campaign for the Government Accountability Project, also known as GAP, from 1985 to 2007. He founded the Cincinnati Alliance for Responsible Energy, known as CARE, helped establish and is a board member of the Hanford Concerns Council, and also serves on the Hanford Advisory Board. Tom, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us again this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. Good to be here.
So to start out, give us a brief overview of what is the Hanford Challenge.
Hanford Challenge is an organization that's based in Seattle but has a regional membership. And we focus on the cleanup that is supposed to be happening at the Hanford nuclear site. The Hanford nuclear site is a former military production facility to make plutonium for the nation's nuclear arsenal. It started in World War II and developed the plutonium that was used in the bomb over Nagasaki. And since that time, it made most of the plutonium for the nuclear arsenal in the United States. And as a result, the Hanford site became the most contaminated facility in the United States. So it has two-thirds of the nation's high-level nuclear waste, and most of the low-activity nuclear waste, so-called, and a lot of chemical contamination, et cetera. And this is a reservation basically in southeastern Washington state, and it's about 585 square miles. So the Hanford site is now, it's no longer producing any military materials, and it's in cleanup mode and has been since 1989. And U.S. taxpayers are spending about $2 billion a year on this cleanup. It's probably going to last another 50 to 100 years, maybe longer at the pace they're going. And we've spent about $40 billion on the cleanup so far.
With very mixed results.
Well, right. There's been some cleanup along the river corridor where they had 9 reactors. And they've knocked down a lot of buildings, dug up some contamination. They're starting to clean up some of the groundwater through what's called a pump and treat program. But the biggest problem out there is really the high-level nuclear waste that's left over from the processing of spent nuclear fuel. And this waste is stored in underground tanks out there. There's 56 million gallons of this waste stored in these tanks. There's probably another 120 million gallons stored, well, basically dumped to the soil. And there's a lot of cleanup to do there. This is very, very toxic material that lasts anywhere from hundreds of years in toxicity to millions of years. And it's very dangerous in tiny quantities. So that's a big challenge there. We haven't cleaned up any of that waste.
So King 5, local NBC affiliate, has been doing an outstanding series on Hanford. And one of the issues that they have been bringing to light of late is a problem with workers there being overcome by toxic vapors. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We have a long history with this issue ourselves at Hanford Challenge and then before that GAP. And what happens at Hanford is that these large underground nuclear waste tanks that contain all this radioactive waste has a lot of chemicals in the waste. And there's a level or a layer of liquids and solids to this waste, and then there's a headspace, an empty space there. These tanks, although they're underground, they pressurize, so they have to be vented, and they're allowed to vent. Otherwise, they could implode or explode, and that would be a bad day, for everyone. So there's a constant exchange of air, and that means that what's ever in the tank comes out. Now, of course, they filter for radiation coming out of these tanks in what's called a HEPA filter, which is high-energy particulate. So it captures particulates. But what it doesn't capture out there is vapors. And a vapor is basically a gas in a transition phase from solid, you know, to gaseous, and it can go back to solid if it needs to, or liquid or whatever. So these vapors, they're very hard to capture. They go right through most filters, and workers end up inhaling these vapors, and on occasion, someone gets really sick. There have been occasions where workers have died after exposure to these vapors from brain damage and chronic illnesses. There's chemicals in these vapors that are known to cause cancer. There is no acceptable exposure limit for a chemical known to cause cancer. We don't know at what level of exposure that an individual may contract cancer from exposure to these suspected or known carcinogens, yet they're present in these tanks. And they're known to be present in the vapors that workers breathe in. So for the last 30 years, it's been documented that workers have needed medical treatment. They've been hospitalized after exposure to these vapors. And they know it's happening because people get nosebleeds, headaches, bad taste in the mouth, really bad smell in some cases. Some people have lost consciousness. Sometimes experience profuse sweating that won't stop for a long time. So those are the temporary kind of symptoms that people have felt. They go to the clinic or the hospital. They're examined, but nobody knows what they've been exposed to. There's thousands of chemicals in these vapors, and Hanford does not and basically cannot do a good job of monitoring the exposures out there. We're talking open-air exposures and tiny, tiny quantities of chemicals that can be very dangerous in those tiny quantities. But snatching those molecules out of the air at the time of inhalation is just impossible. They don't do it. They can't do it. And many of those chemicals need to be analyzed for in a laboratory. So they don't have a laboratory sitting right there that they can use for that. In other words, you've got a hazardous waste environment where vapors come and go unpredictably, sometimes predictably. People breathe them in and then get ill, but doctors are unable to diagnose what they're looking at, what might happen to these people. And the vast majority of workers who get exposed recover, at least temporarily, and are back on the job within a week. However, some don't come back to work, depending on the severity of exposure. Others may get dozens or even hundreds of exposures over their career, and then one normal exposure basically is the tipping point where they become really sick and they don't come back to work. So King 5 has been documenting injuries and illnesses resulting from these exposures because starting March 19th of this year, a group of workers succumbed to vapor exposure at the tank farms at Hanford, and then more workers from a different tank farm, and the numbers started growing. First it was 6, then it was 8, then it was 14. And at this point in time, as of today, June 29th, 28th, there have been about 39 exposures to vapors at the tank farms requiring medical evaluation or hospitalization. It's a tremendously large number of people. And what's mystifying to me is why Hanford has not taken any steps to protect these workers from these vapors in the short term, right? Like right now, it's like every week there's a new set of exposures. What are you doing? Well, the Department of Energy is the agency that runs the site, and it's a federal agency, and their response to that question is, well, we're doing a study. Wow, really? Gee, that's impressive, right? They've done 30 studies of this, 30. That comes from the DOE itself. They told me that a couple of weeks ago, and I was aware of most of those studies, and I've read most of those studies, and they all pretty much say the same thing, which is chemical vapors are dangerous. They contain chemicals that can cause cancer. They're present in the tank in very high numbers, and people who inhale these are subject to unknown medical risks, but some people are at high risk. So, for example, one study that was performed in 1997 documented that workers who inhaled even from a single exposure from one tank at the of the 177 tanks out there, they looked at one tank, that the risk of cancer, a fatal cancer, was as high as 16 in 100, 1.6 in 10. The EPA's action level is 1 in a million. So if someone may get cancer at 1 in a million, then the EPA takes steps to protect people. At Hanford, it's 1.6 in 10 for a fatal cancer from a single exposure, and yet no respiratory protection for these people. You know, to speak of, they only take action when someone gets, you know, has a symptom. They smell something, or they have a advanced heartbeat or something like that. But there's really no way to measure this stuff effectively out there. So this is a crisis. It's a medical crisis, but it's also an occupational health crisis at the nation's most toxic chemical site in the nation. But it's also the richest, right? It's getting $2 billion a year of taxpayer money. And they've got an industrial hygiene protection program that looks like it's in the 1950s. And they just refuse to spend the money on it to actually protect the workers out there. Well, if they're not protecting their own people, you think they're protecting the environment or they're protecting us and other humans out here? I don't think so. I think that if they're not willing even to protect their own people, that there's something else going on at Hanford that is deeply, deeply wrong with this system, that just won't listen. So this is a very serious situation that's unfolding right now at the Hanford site.
So why aren't they giving their people breathing units so that they could either breathe fresh air or at least filter out known stuff out there?
Right. So I'll hasten to say that workers are given what are called half masks, and these are sometimes called combo cartridge masks or PAPRs, their hoods. However, vapors go right through those filters. So I call them half-assed masks because they look like they're doing something, but they're no more effective than a little dust mask that you might put on if you're, you know, doing work around your house. They might as well not do it because it's still hot and uncomfortable. So the reason they don't use the most effective protection, which is the fresh air, the supplied air, is that, you know, first and foremost, it's very expensive. And they don't want to spend the money on what it would take to build the infrastructure if everyone used fresh air. So, for instance, there were only 40 instances where they used fresh air in the last year at Hanford. So out of the many, many hundreds of people that have worked at the tank farms in that time frame, people who request it can't get it. They're told it's not safe to wear it because it's heavy and hot and causes, you know, stress, or you can't see it, you know, et cetera. So the reason for that is that the program out there doesn't think that these chemical vapors are harmful. And I keep hearing that message over and over. You read the newspaper coverage on this, and the quotes from, you know, the top officials talk about nuisances. And some people react to it like perfume, right? Well, excuse me, no. There's video done by King 5 of Gary Saul dying in his hospital bed from this, trembling and scared. And there's other folks out there in the same story. And there are, you know, I talked to a doctor in Spokane who's been treating Hanford workers, and he's diagnosed 26 workers from Hanford who were exposed to chemical vapors and contracted toxic encephalopathy, which is brain damage. It's industrially caused brain damage. When he told me 26, it knocked my socks off. I mean, that's huge. DOE isn't aware of this. They don't bother to ask anybody. They don't talk to me about it. They put on the blinders and put the plugs in their ears. And even though this information is freely available to King Five and to us and to workers themselves, there's no inquiry going on at the site because they don't want to know. They've never wanted to know, as far as I can tell. So it's a very frustrating situation, you know, for workers, especially people who have to work there. These are good paying jobs. They don't want to give them up. On the other hand, you don't want to get an exposure that's going to kill you down the road.
So why isn't the state intervening in this? For instance, the head of the state labor and industries said she's not seen this many people needing medical attention for a reoccurring circumstance in her career with the state of Washington, and she's been there like 28 years. So she clearly thinks there's a problem there.
Well, there's a lot of people who think that, and my organization, Hanford Challenge, has written a letter to the Attorney General of the state of Washington, Bob Ferguson. We wrote this letter in April. We pointed out that the state has authority to protect workers at the Hanford site under the hazardous waste laws. We wrote this letter. It's a 14-page letter, single-spaced, like a legal brief, because we're attorneys. And we did a lot of research and put a lot of work into this. And we wrote it like that because we wanted to show the chief legal officer for the state of Washington that he had a solid basis for moving forward to actually utilize authority to protect Hanford workers because, and their state of Washington citizens, because DOE, the Department of Energy, and Hanford has shown an unwillingness over the last 25 years to take effective action. Now, it's not to say they haven't taken any action, but none of the action has prevented these exposures from happening. So we subsequently did have a meeting with two of the staff attorneys assigned to the Hanford site and from the Attorney General's office. It was a very good meeting. And they kind of sent us a message that the Attorney General was going to take this very seriously, that this was a serious issue to the governor and to the Attorney General, and kind of hinted that there needed to be some pressure. So we started a petition on change.org. We're getting other organizations to write, unions, et cetera, to write to the Attorney General's office. And if anyone who's listening to this cares about this, you can go to our website, hanfordchallenge.org, and there's a petition on there. There's a link to a petition on change.org that you can sign just electronically that would go quickly and automatically to the Attorney General. We are considering other legal steps that we could take under citizen suit provisions. We've been talking to members of Congress from the state of Washington, Adam Smith, who's a representative, and both senators, of course, Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray. And we haven't gotten that far with them. They say the right things. They say they care. There's no action coming out of those quarters. Adam Smith has been the most active on it. He's actually talked to a bunch of folks at Department of Labor, at OSHA, you know, at the Department of Energy. And we're trying to get him to also expand and talk to doctors and workers who have been hurt, et cetera, because essentially they're blowing smoke. And he's being told a load of crap that he needs to examine the veracity of. So right now he's taking a wait-and-see attitude. He's like, well, it looks like they're protecting workers. Gee, where do you get that, right? Because every week there's a new set of workers being hurt. And, you know, they're banking on this so-called independent study, which is actually another contractor under the control of the Department of Energy has been brought in to do this study at Hanford. So we don't call that independent. We call that, you know, a captured audience study. So obviously your customer is going to please you. So the Department of Energy is going to expect to get a result. So whatever the Department of Energy wants, it's going to get from this study. And they won't cross certain lines. So that study is, we don't give it much hope, and we don't think it's that necessary. We think it's necessary that they take action. And the kind of action that needs to be taken is they need to put scrubbers on these tanks. Scrubbers, you might have heard that term used in connection with coal plants, right? So coal plants, you know, that emit very dangerous pollutants to the environment. The coal dust and the vapors coming out of that go through in modern plants a set of scrubbers that capture those vapors. The same thing can happen at the Hanford site. There's chemical vapor scrubbers, and again, they're expensive and troublesome, so the site doesn't want to use them, but every other modern chemical facility out there does, and we're urging that the Attorney General step in and regulate this site. Like any other site in the United States, it needs external regulation. The Department of Energy has a conflict of interest when it decides what money to spend to have production goals versus protecting workers, and the workers often get short shrift and usually get short shrift, and they're not being protected now. That means we need outside protection. We need a regulator from the outside. And, yeah, I'd like to see WSHA in there. WSHA is the Washington Industrial Safety Health Administration, and they regulate health and safety matters in the state of Washington, but not at Hanford. That can change. It's a regulatory change that can be made. And I'd like to see the governor insist on that, and I'd like to see our own congressional delegation insist on that.
When the initial tank leaks, the latest tank leaks, hit the news, Governor Inslee, at least in public, seemed to respond to that. Do you have any indication that he is going to do anything concrete towards that issue?
Yes. On March 31st, the governor, Governor Inslee, and Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General, held a press conference of this year and announced a series of initiatives towards Hanford that were very concrete in nature. And the first thing they did was issue what's called an administrative order. And anytime a polluter is engaged in some act that is contrary to the law, then the regulator, in this case the state of Washington, can issue an administrative order that says, you will do such and such on this timeline and tell us how you're doing, or you'll be subject to civil penalties and possibly criminal penalties. So the order can be appealed, but while it's being appealed, it still is in effect. In this case, the order was that Hanford was required to start emptying and remediating a failed double shell tank, a tank that failed about 2.5 years ago called AY-102. There have been several failure points on that tank. The Department of Energy has shown no willingness or interest in pumping or remediating that tank. They're waiting for it to fail so that it actually hits the environment, and then they'll take action. That's exactly what they have said. They've basically, because it's, they'll run it to failure. That's a common term at Hanford. It's like, well, it's too late then, because the stuff gets into the soil, and how are you going to get it out of the soil underneath this, million ton monolith, right? You've got to move the tank out of the way. So there's been a million gallons leak into the soil this way. So we're very appreciative of the fact that the governor and the attorney general have taken very strong action, very specific requirements imposed upon the Department of Energy in Hanford to deal with this tank. But they went beyond that. They're also seeking to change what's called a consent decree. And the way cleanup happens at Hanford right now is that there's an agreement called the Tri-Party Agreement. And that agreement is a set of compliance milestones and agreements, but it was not subject to a court-ordered settlement. So it's not in a lot of those milestones are not in a consent decree. So a consent decree means that you can go to court, straight to court, when someone fails to meet a deadline, and the judge can take matters into, his or her hands at that point and start issuing penalties and motivate, and maybe even send someone to jail, motivate them to take that action as agreed. So right now the state is slowly putting some very important cleanup goals and deadlines that probably should have been a consent decree in the first place into that form. Well, the Department of Energy is going crazy over that. They issued their own proposed consent decree. And the difference between the two documents, the DOE's consent decree proposal and the state's, is like night and day. The DOE's is you know, a handful of pages, and it says essentially someday, somehow, maybe we'll get some cleanup going at Hanford. It will tell you when. And the state says, okay, when it comes to the single shell tanks, you'll have 8 of those empty by 2018. You'll have, 16 empty by 2022. You'll have the waste treatment plant, these issues dealt with. You'll have direct treatment for this and accountability requirements. You know, you'll report every 3 weeks. You'll do this, you'll do that. And it's, wow. The states started to act like a regulator out there. They woke up, and our green governor actually started to live up to his credentials, and kudos to him for doing that. Now, the trick is to make sure they don't cave, because there's tremendous counter pressure from, of course, rich contractors, the federal government, and even the Tri-Cities itself that doesn't want too much regulation. They're afraid it'll hurt the economy out there. And they're a very powerful voice, in some cases to not have that kind of regulation. Now, don't get me wrong, the Tri-Cities communities really want cleanup to happen out there. They're some of the strongest voices for environmental cleanup. They live there. But there are contractors and others that, are too busy making money to actually want to have to live up to the law. Of course, the federal government doesn't want to spend the money to do the cleanup in an accountable way. But they really need that accountability.
Just a couple minutes left. Can you give us an update on the vitrification plant?
It's stalled. I think last time we were talking, they were in the process of firing a number of whistleblowers. The top echelon of their technical staff, the director of the manager of nuclear safety, the manager of research and technology, the chief engineer, the chief scientist, all those people have become whistleblowers because of the design problems with this plant. Now, this is a plant that's supposed to be taking the waste from the tanks and mixing that with glass. The glass cools, and the waste is now in the glass matrix. And it's a good idea. It's just that it's an expensive idea, and they haven't been able to accomplish getting this facility up and going. So the whistleblowers have been pointing out some very unhappy design problems, very much along the lines of what happened at, preventable accidents that, like what happened in Japan in terms of hydrogen gas explosions and nuclear criticalities. Because the design is simply insufficient, and the construction of the plant was careless, inept, and mismanaged. So nuclear safety laws were not obeyed, and the contractor has essentially benefited handsomely from this, from an estimated $4 billion to build it. That was the estimate back in 2000 to now we're over $13 billion, and probably it's going to cost $25 to $30 billion before it's all done. Every step along the way, the contractors, Bechtel, URS, are just raking in the money because they have to keep rebuilding it and changing the design and et cetera. And the Department of Energy's response to all this is to be more collaborative this is documented in a DOE report that came out, more collaborative with the contractor this week, and be nice to them and maybe they'll be better to us. It's like, wow, really? Anyway, so the waste treatment plant's in big trouble. We don't see that it's probably going to work, and they need to look at a plan B.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are just about out of time. We're talking with Tom Carpenter. He is executive director of the Hanford Challenge. And how can people find out more about your organization?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our Facebook site, which is, Hanford Challenge. Just look us up there. All the news and updates are there. If you want more detail, you can go to our website at hanfordchallenge.org and sign up for our email updates, and we send out something every day, or if you don't like that, every week. So there's ways to get news. It's a very dynamic situation. We need help. Change only comes through people caring about what's happening. So most of what we do is educate and organize and try to get folks to act on this stuff. We also represent and work with whistleblowers out there so people get the best information about what's happening.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us again this morning.
Thanks, Mike.